From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. A new study is showing that COVID infection could result in new onset of hypertension, or better known as high blood pressure. Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, is joining us today to talk more about this finding as well as other public health issues. And remember, if you have a public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hey, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, can we talk a little bit more about this issue in regards to hypertension? We should let folks know, you and I have chatted about this offline before, and now there's, what, a new study out, potentially with a correlation.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, many of us have just kind of felt in our guts that we were seeing a lot more hypertension in people, that was new onset hypertension in people following COVID. But that's not how we make scientific determinations. We don't go by our guts or anecdotes. So we've been waiting for the studies. There was a study that came out earlier and did seem to strongly suggest that there was this correlation. But we have to be careful because hypertension is so common anyway. We have to make sure that it's a really statistically significant increase in that year period after COVID before we would say that there definitely is some kind of an association, if not causal effect. And so recently a study did come out. And it was better done because they had records on these people of what their blood pressures were prior to COVID. And that's the key thing, because a lot of people could have hypertension and just not know it. But in these subjects, they had normal blood pressures and were not on blood pressure medication prior to getting COVID. And then it was determined that following their COVID. Now, these were people that got severe infections, so it's hard to know. We need more data to tell, is it the same risk with mild or moderate infections? But it was a staggering 32% increase, the chances of those cases that got admitted to the hospital with COVID, 32% of them had new onset hypertension within the year following that episode of COVID. So there certainly does seem to be an association. We're going to need more information. I think really the point of this and why it's so important to talk about, Gemma, is, again, because generally hypertension or high blood pressure is not going to cause symptoms, that it's important for everyone after you've had COVID to get some regular checkups for a while, because we're finding more and more of these long-term health consequences from COVID. So certainly, if you have any lingering symptoms or new problems following COVID, of course, go see your doctor. But probably a good idea to get a checkup with your doctor within 6 months after having COVID, and then again, at least at 1 year after COVID, because of the fact that we're seeing some of these things present within that first year after COVID.
So, Dr. Pate, what about younger folks potentially getting hypertension? Any information in regards to that? And I ask that because I've heard anecdotally about some teenagers who are being monitored for hypertension and doctors saying, we believe there's a link between COVID infection and hypertension.
Yes. Well, I think if I recall correctly, the two studies that I looked at, I believe those were all 18 and above adults. So we don't, to my knowledge, have as good evidence for kids. But I can tell you that there's no reason to think it wouldn't affect adolescence in the same way that it might affect adults. So while I think we're still waiting on the scientific evidence there, I think the same thing goes. If you have a child who has had COVID, I would certainly get them checked again, just like I was saying for adults, following it, although we just don't have the evidence yet, but I'm sure that will be coming.
So let's talk about COVID boosters, because the Federal Drug Administration just came out, I believe, in the last couple of days, saying that we should be updating our boosters. So tell us why they're giving this recommendation, and then we can talk a little bit more about how and when this might work.
Sure. So what happened first is the World Health Organization's vaccine committee made a recommendation for, and this would be a worldwide recommendation, that the COVID boosters, the next set of boosters, should be updated for the more recent circulating variants. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that here in the United States, our last boosters that we have that got approved, if my memory serves me correctly, it was around September of last year. That was the bivalent vaccine, which was a combination of the spike proteins from the original virus plus the BA4, BA5 variant. And I mentioned both of them because their spike is very close to each other. So that was the second component. Now the World Health Organization said their recommendation was do an updated one, go with one of the more currently circulating variants. And most of the currently circulating variants are of the XBB type. And your long-term listeners will remember me explaining to people that when the variant starts with the letter X, that means it's a recombinant. In other words, it's what has happened is two viruses have infected someone and they've swapped some of their genetic material. So we call it a recombination, where now the new form of the virus has a little bit of the first one and a little bit of the second one. And so that's what's presently circulating around the world. And currently we're at XBB, and then we have a number of subvariants, but the World Health Organization suggested that. Then, as you said, the FDA's vaccine committee met on June 15th to consider the data, look at our vaccine studies, and make a recommendation for manufacturers as to what kind of vaccine makeup should we have for this fall. And what the FDA's committee said is really in agreement with what the World Health Organization was, that we should go back to a monovalent, just one spike protein, and it should be from the XBB family. And then the FDA's committee went further to say that, considering all of the subvariants circulating right now, their recommendation would be, and they made it a strong and unanimous recommendation, so I think all the manufacturers will do this, is to make it using the XBB.1.5, which has been a very prominent circulating form of this variant worldwide and here in the United States. So that we would look forward to that coming. I would imagine, October plus or minus a month, maybe September, maybe November, but somewhere in that neighborhood. And we will certainly be recommending people get vaccinated with a booster, because remember, while the current boosters are really excellent at protecting against severe disease or death, they, because this virus has evolved so much, they're not nearly as protective about getting infected. And, you know, for the last few months, Gemma, we've spent a lot of time talking about bad things that happen from COVID that aren't death or hospitalization. So we're going to want to decrease our chances of getting infected, and getting a new booster is going to be a better hope for that.
So, Dr. Pate, when this new booster comes out, do we know yet who should be getting it? Because I ask this because, first off, I don't even remember the last time I got a booster shot. Don't remember when my kids did. And I am under the impression that probably all or a majority of immunity has gone away at this point. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, we have to be careful by what do we mean by immunity. And so this is where it gets confusing. So a lot of people think of immunity as meaning, well, I can't get infected because I'm protection. That's very few vaccines do that. Some do, but very few prevent you from getting infected, like the flu vaccine, for example. Mm-hmm. However, what the main job of vaccines is that if you do get infected, make sure that you don't get deathly ill or have to go in the hospital or even ultimately die. And so what we've seen from the boosters that we currently have available in the United States, that they are providing very good protection against that severe disease. So for example, when those bivalents came out, as I said, I my recollection, it was last September. If you got that bivalent vaccine back then, you probably still are pretty well protected from getting severe disease, but you probably have almost none, if not none, protection against getting infected right now. So we certainly recommended that people who might have extra challenges with maintaining immunity against severe disease, like the elderly, like the immunocompromised, that not only should they have gotten that bivalent vaccine last September, or it might have actually been late August, but not only should they have gotten that, but they should get have gotten a second by now, and to give them protection. What we're expecting, although it won't be the FDA's committee that says this, this will go to a vaccine committee of the CDC that will make this recommendation later in the year. But what they will say is who should get this booster. So the FDA committee says, what should the booster be? The CDC's committee will say who and how often. And what we're anticipating, but this hasn't been decided yet, is that the fall booster with the XBB.1.5 will be made available for everyone, is my guess, and including down to 6 months. That is my guess. We'll have to wait and see what they actually say. But that would be the guess, is everybody could get the booster then. Then what I think they will go on to say is that if you are older, you know, I imagine they'll use 65, they might use something different, but if you're 65 or older, or you have an immunocompromising condition, you should also get another booster within 6 months, is what my guess is will be. Whereas younger people and those that are healthy, I think clearly they've expressed an interest in trying to go to an annual COVID booster shot. So that's my guess. We'll wait to see. And of course, you and I will discuss when they actually come out with the recommendation.
Right. Okay. So fall is when we should be hearing at least more about this.
Yeah, I think we'll have a really good idea about when they'll be available by September. If they're not available in September, my guess is it's going to be closer to October, but we'll see.
So, Dr. Pate, there's some new studies that have also come out, and this is about children and schools and school policies that happened during the pandemic. Can you elaborate more on these findings?
Yeah, there's actually been a number of surprises lately, and we won't cover all of them right now, but two major ones is we will all remember the talk back when schools were discussing, you know, should we have masks? Should we, you know, worry about trying to identify kids who are sick, et cetera, et cetera? Because there was a lot of people spreading the mantra that, you know, first of all, kids don't get very sick from COVID. And second of all, that they would be unlikely to transmit the virus. And so what we've learned from these recent studies is that, and Jimmy, your listeners will remember that way back then, I was expressing caution about that because even though we didn't know how well children would transmit the virus, that certainly for influenza, which is spread almost identically the same way as COVID, we've known for years that it's kids in schools that propagate influenza outbreaks. They get it at school and bring it home and spread it. And so we were warning about that. And it turns out that, in fact, when they did some careful studies trying to figure out how household infections occur, they identified in more than 70% of cases, it was like 70.4%, that it started with a child. And then the other family members were subsequently infected. And so while certainly we have seen that children in general, there's certainly exceptions, tend to have milder illness, tend not to be in the hospital, tend not to die, but they are very important in the chain of transmission of this virus. So we need to keep that in mind, particularly for those households that have vulnerable family members. For example, like a parent that I talked to that was undergoing chemotherapy, or many families that are multi-generational and might have grandma or grandpa living with them. The other study that came out is there was a lot of talk that children probably didn't have high viral loads in their nose and probably weren't very effective at transmitting it because of weaker cough, et cetera. But this recent study showed that children of all ages can have equally high levels of infectious virus, not just virus, but actually infectious virus. Now, that's not the end of the story about transmission, but these are just two studies to tell us we way underestimated the role and risks that children play in the transmission of this virus.
That is good information, Dr. Pate. I want to, again, just thank you for your time today and coming in and getting us updated on all of this new information. So really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. Remember, if you have a COVID-19 question or if you have a public health question or concern, remember you can email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.